Hi, everybody. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. Today, we continue our series in working with Evoke Therapy staff and therapists to learn a little bit about them, their background, and also what was the journey that led them to becoming a therapist or working for Evoke. Emily Krupa is a licensed substance abuse counselor. She also holds a master's degree in marriage and family therapy. Emily and I have had the pleasure of working together on several occasions, so I'm really excited to welcome her and also to share with her, to have her share with you the story and the journey, because I think there's some richness in her story that I think all of us can take something away from. So I'm really glad to have her today. So I'm very happy to welcome Emily to the podcast today. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you, Brad. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you as a guest. I always like to talk with therapists about kind of what led them into this work, what led to them becoming a therapist. So tell us a little bit about your story, your journey to becoming a therapist.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up here in Utah, in a little town kind of out in the West Desert of Utah. It was just me, my brother, and my parents who are still together today. And I grew up remembering just having a really, really happy childhood. You know, I lived in a really small town. We would walk to school every day, you know, walk home. I mean, just a small town, kind of a lot of fun growing up. My parents had, you know, a pretty large group of friends that also had a lot of kids that were the same age as my brother and I. So we spent a lot of time with kids our whole lives, you know, going camping and being outdoors and going to the lake and just a really happy childhood growing up there. And I remember feeling this really large sense of community in growing up in this town. We were all very connected. It was small enough that you kind of knew everybody. The schools were small and things like that. So I just remembered feeling like I had this really strong sense of community when I grew up. And a little bit of that changed in 2005 for me. I was driving in a car with four of my friends, and we were going down a dirt road, and I crashed. I crashed the car, and it took the life of one of my very best friends. We were 16 at the time, and, you know, seatbelts weren't all that important to 16-year-olds. It wasn't cool to wear your seatbelt, and it kind of flipped our world a little bit. It kind of changed our world when she passed away, when that car accident took her life. And I got pretty banged up as well. I spent a couple of months in the hospital recovering from that, just physically recovering from that. And so I spent a lot of time, the hospitals in the town that I grew up in couldn't handle, you know, something as severe as my injuries. And so I left that community and I spent time outside of that community kind of physically recovering. So I spent a lot of time away from my community, just physically recovering. And when I returned to my community, things had really changed pretty dramatically. You know, I had my own sort of stuff going through my head, you know, of kind of survivor's guilt a little bit. You know, how come my friend passed and not me? And just, I had a lot of really intense emotions from that experience. And my mental health kind of started declining after that. And then when I returned to that community, I felt like the community kind of turned on me a little bit too. I had a lot of folks that did blame me, both, you know, passively and aggressively, blamed me for the accident. And, you know, a lot of my friends were no longer my friends. And I felt really isolated and really alone after that experience in my high school as a sophomore in high school when this accident happened. And so I really struggled for a little while just with dealing with all of the feelings and the emotions that happened as a result of that car accident, both physically just recovering. I remember I broke my back pretty significantly and what my family lovingly called my turtle shell, because it was this thick plastic back brace. Essentially, it had like Velcro on either side, and it was this really thick plastic brace that I had to wear for a pretty long time while my back, you know, was recovering. So I had the physical scars that I was trying to recover from, as well as kind of just all of the emotional turmoil of losing my friend and feeling, you know, isolated and alone. I definitely lost my friend that lost her life, but I also lost the friendship of the other three friends that were in that car that day. And, you know, kind of felt like I lost all of my friends. A lot of, you know, I felt a lot like that community turned on me a little bit. So I really struggled for a while. You know, the relationship with my parents struggled because they, you know, really just wanted to help and support me, and they just had no idea how to. So I acted out, you know, and made a lot of dangerous choices for a little while. And ultimately, it came down to my parents sending me to treatment in 2007. So I attended treatment over the summer of 2007. And really, overall, it was a pretty good experience for me. The therapist that I had at the time, I think, truly saw me for the first time in a while. She listened to me for the first time, you know, what I felt like in a while. And really, overall, it was a pretty good experience. And so when I left that treatment center, I come out kind of shiny and new. You know, I have all the answers now, and I'm healed and I'm recovered. And, you know, I'm going to go work in treatment centers. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to work in treatment centers and be a therapist. And I really, man, I had, you know, everything figured out when I left that treatment center. I had all the answers and knew exactly what I was going to do. And so I left and I went back to my small community and decided, you know, that in order for all of my problems to kind of go away, I needed to leave that community. So I graduated high school early and left and moved for college. And I was going to start attending college up here in Utah County. And I remember thinking, all of my problems are going to be over now. I'm going to leave this town. I went to, you know, treatment and, you know, healed or recovered or whatever you're supposed to do. I remember thinking, all of my problems are over now and things are going to be easy. Things are going to be good now. So I moved and started attending college and quickly realized, you know, that I didn't have all the answers, that I actually knew very little. And I still struggled. I still struggled really significantly. You know, I was failing a lot of my classes in college. I wasn't motivated. I was still using drugs. I was in a pretty toxic relationship. And I just wasn't doing very well. And I remember I was put on academic probation a couple of times because I was not attending school. I wasn't doing homework. I was not doing well in college. So I met with my advisor a couple of times, and it was never really a good experience. You know, it was, hey, I really need you to get your crap together so that I don't have to kick you out. And I remember getting an email from her saying, I really need to see you. And this was, you know, maybe the third time I had met with her. I'd already been on academic probation. I got this email and I thought, okay, this is it. They are definitely going to kick me out. I'm going to, you know, be a college dropout. I have no idea what I'm going to do with my life. And I just felt really, really low. And I remember going and meeting with her. It was at UVU where I attended college. And I remember sitting down in her office and she looked at me, which I was kind of in the habit of not making eye contact with people. I didn't really want to look at people. I didn't want people to look at me because I was struggling so significantly. And I thought, you know, at any moment, if someone looks at me, I'm just going to completely break down. And so when I sat in her office and she kind of, you know, almost like made me look at her a little bit. And I remember her saying, how's your life, Emily? Not saying that she was going to kick me out or not, you know, coming at me or anything. She truly looked at me and said, how is your life? And that has always stuck with me. I feel like, you know, people frequently ask, you know, how you doing or what's going on or, you know, whatever. And I don't know if they really ever want the answer, you know, say, oh, yeah, you know, things are good. And you kind of walk away. And she genuinely looked at me and said, how is your life? Mm-hmm. And I lost it. I totally broke down. I said, I have no idea what I'm doing. I cannot seem to get anything together. I just don't know. I'm just struggling so significantly. Mm-hmm. And she listened and listened and listened and listened and listened, you know, for a long time, listened to me. And then she told me the story of the Golden Buddha that I had, at that point, I had never heard. I had no idea what she's talking about. And if you don't know the story of the Golden Buddha, you know, you can Google it. It's on YouTube or, you know, I think it's like the first 15 minutes of Finding Joe or something. Mm-hmm. But she told me that story and she said, you have had a lot of clay throughout your whole life. You've had all of this clay that has been, you know, kind of tacked on you, and you've put some there and other people have put some there. But at some point, you have to make the choice to start chipping away some of your clay, and nobody can do it but you. Mm-hmm. And that really, that story still resonated with me. You know, I still love that story. I still tell that story to my clients. But that really resonated with me. And so she, you know, gave me a couple. She said, here's a therapist, you know, that you could start seeing. I had seen therapists, you know, a little bit in the past, and just never really, you know, I'd go sit in the couch and I'd cry because I'm a pretty easy crier. It's not that hard to make me cry. And uh-huh. So she, you know, I had done that and I never really had great experiences. And she said, this therapist is a little bit different. You know, he does sand tray work, and it's a little bit different than your traditional talk therapy. And so, so I scheduled an appointment with him. And the other thing she said, you know, I remember meeting with you last year and you saying, you know, you wanted to work in treatment centers because of your experience and you wanted to, you know, become a therapist. And she said, there's this program, you know, that's a therapeutic boarding school and they're hiring and you could, you know, go start to get kind of a feel of what it's like to work in a therapeutic boarding school and, you know, work as a staff. And so she gave me the number, you know, of them so I could call and start getting a job there. And so I started doing therapy. I started, you know, finally doing my own work, I guess. I'd done a little bit in treatment, but not, I think, as much as I was able to accomplish with Santre. Santre was a very, very different experience for me. A lot of my car accident, I had blocked kind of. I couldn't, you know, I didn't have a really good memory of what occurred. And it was really hard for me to process that trauma. And so being able to do Santre, something that's, you know, far more experiential than your kind of traditional talk therapy, was totally different. It was a totally different experience for me. And I think, you know, eventually kind of helped me get through some of the emotions that I was feeling. And so I also started working for that program that she recommended. I went in, you know, I did an interview, and I got a job as just a regular, you know, support staff, basically that's there to kind of, I had no idea what I was getting into. Really, I think I had no idea what I was getting into. Right. But ultimately, it was one of the best choices that I've ever made, is starting working for, you know, this therapeutic boarding school. It's called New Haven down in, they have one in Saratoga Springs and then they have one in Spanish Fork. But New Haven really, for me, taught me what it meant to be a therapist. And it showed me who I wanted to be as a therapist. You know, the people at the time working for New Haven were the most experiential people that I had met. You know, they were doing things like family sculpting, and we were doing these things called them intensive days, where we would basically, it was a therapeutic boarding school, so the girls were there, you know, all the time, but we would take them on like a Saturday and we would go, you know, up American Fork Canyon. We would go as deep, you know, into the canyon as we could possibly take the 15 passenger van, and we would light a fire and we would all have journals and we would sit there all day and just spend time together and process and And it was incredible. It taught me, you know, who I wanted to be as a therapist. The mentors that I had there taught me so much. And that was kind of the moment that I was like, okay, I want to be a therapist. And if I want to be a therapist, I have to get through some of my own crap first. And I have to continue to do, you know, my own work so that I can be an effective therapist. And so that's kind of a really, really long answer to that question. But that's.
No, I love it because I think that it gives some richness and texture to the journey to become a therapist. And for me, I said this recently on a podcast, I think sometimes the most worrisome therapists that I've met don't realize that it was their complex human journey that got them there. They kind of think of it in simple terms, like I'm just here to help other people live a good life like I'm living. And so I really appreciate that. I have a question about the journey a little bit more, which is when you thought about becoming a therapist, when you wanted to become a therapist, what's the biggest lesson or the biggest thing you learned as you've become a therapist and practice therapy? What's the biggest thing you learned that was a surprise or a new idea to you? I'm asking kind of the idea between what you thought it was going to be a therapist to what it really means to be a therapist. Was there a lesson in there? Was there a surprise? Was there something you had to kind of adjust to in your thought process?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, originally my experience with therapists was therapists were these incredibly smart, had all the answers. You could go in and sit with them for an hour and they would tell you exactly what you needed to do to solve all of your problems. And they were, you know, I had this idea that like therapists were on this pedestal of like changing lives and, you know, healing people and fixing all of their problems. And I think, you know, New Haven and just continued, you know, throughout my career thus far, I'm really a fairly new therapist, but on my career so far, I think the most valuable thing that I have learned is that my job as a therapist is to shut up and to listen. And I don't have all of the answers. And in fact, I don't want to have all of the answers. It is so much more of a pleasurable experience for me in working with my clients is to help them figure out the answers. And I think that kind of changed my perspective of, you know, what it meant to be a therapist is I thought that I had to have all of these answers. And now that I am into it, you know, a little bit more, I was, you know, a substance abuse counselor for 8 years. And then I just recently finished my grad school program and now I'm a marriage and family therapist, but the most valuable thing that I learned was just shut up. I just need to listen to them. That is what people need, is for people to see them, to hear them. And yeah, that I think that was the most valuable lesson that I've learned so far, is to just be there for people.
I love that. I love it. You know, my therapist taught me it years ago, and I'm still learning that lesson today to shut up. But she taught me that the master therapist is the one who prides themselves on what they don't say. So something that I also learned, but kind of, as you know, as we practice this craft, it's something that I have to continue to learn and be reminded of. What do you love most about being a therapist and the work that you're now doing?
Right now, what I love about being a therapist is, oh my gosh, I just learn new things all the time. I work with, you know, some of the most incredible humans that I know, and I just love learning right now. I love learning how to be a better therapist. I love learning how to be a better mother, a better wife, a better daughter. And I think that's something that I love the most, is being able to, I am helping others, and that I'm hoping to help people along their journey, whatever their journey is. I'm hoping to help guide people in the direction that they want to go. And I'm doing my own work all the time too. I'm learning from them as much as they're learning from me. And I get to, you know, meet people and show them true compassion and not judgment, which I think, you know, we experience kind of often in our lives, unfortunately, is a little bit of judgment. You know, well, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, you shouldn't be doing this, you shouldn't be doing that. And I think I really love just being curious, wanting mm-hmm. to know more, wanting to know why, help me understand. You know, and that's a little bit something that I learned from, you know, in working with you, is just help me understand, because I know you have a good reason. And so I just want to know more. And so I really love that about being a therapist. And, you know, the work that I'm currently doing, I took a weird detour on my journey to become a therapist. When I started going to grad school, I started working for a tech company, of all things. I started working for an electronic medical record. And I never in a million years would have expected, you know, working for a tech company and truly loving it. But what I truly love about working for this company is I get to work with treatment centers from all over the country, really, and help them to do their documentation, you know, put things in the medical record that they have to, because we all have to as therapists, unfortunately. You know, if you ask any therapist on the planet, what's your least favorite thing about your job? It's going to say their medical records. It's going to say, right, you know, that I have to write notes. And so I love that I get to work with people doing that right now and helping them make that process more efficient, helping them to make that process as painless as possible, you know. And I feel like the company that I work for really focuses on that, on, you know, our slogan or our mission is, you know, we want to help the helpers, because we want to help people to be able to do their documentation as quickly and efficiently as possible so that they can get the heck out of the computer and go do what they really love to do.
Right, right.
So, yeah, it's kind of a sideways turn in my career, but I really love it. And now I get to, you know, I work for the tech company. I get to do the work with Evoke that I absolutely love. And I see some clients, you know, in private practice. I feel like the best of all of the worlds right now.
So what do you do outside of work, outside of therapy, that helps you maintain balance, that helps you with your own mental health maintenance?
Meeting with a therapist regularly definitely helps. You know, this year has been a challenge, as, you know, I think every person that you could ask would say something similar. Something that's really helped me this year is my husband and I, back in January, kind of before all of the COVID stuff started happening, we bought a UTV, which I grew up, you know, around four-wheelers and motorcycles and UTVs. And so they'd always been a big part of my life. And so my husband and I bought one at the beginning of this year, you know, having no idea how important it was going to become to us this year. But we took it out often during the summer, because we could, you know, we would leave right from our home and go up to the hills and go for a ride, or we would go, you know, somewhere a little bit further away. But a lot of kind of what helps keep me grounded is spending time with my toddler. She's 3.5-ish. And, you know, so I'm a new mom and I'm trying to figure that out. And something that really helped this year was, you know, I've always been kind of a things person. Like, I'm going to buy her, you know, all of the toys, and we're going to go to all of the things. We're going to go to the aquarium and the zoo, and we're going to do all of this stuff. And really, Corona kind of took that away. You know, you can't really, there was a while where you just couldn't. And then even now, you know, do we want to, do we not want to? It's just kind of hard to do that kind of stuff. And so this year we've spent a lot of time taking her up into the mountains. And we learned that she will play if we find, you know, some body of water, a river, a lake, anything that has water. She will play with sticks and rocks and leaves in the water all day long, if you let her. She does not need, you know, all of this other stuff that I thought that she needed. All she needs is a river and her picnic box. She needs a little picnic and to play in the river. And so that has helped me this year a tremendous amount with just kind of maintaining balance and taking care of myself is going on these rides with my family and going up to the river and just sitting there during the day and journaling or watching her or just walking around a little bit, going for a little hike or anything like that. Anything involving that has really helped me this year, I think. And, you know, and things like journaling, I journal quite a bit. Journaling in 2020 is really convenient because it's on my laptop. So when I have a lot of things to process, I can type fairly quickly. So that has helped, you know, quite a bit this year as well, with just kind of maintaining balance and keeping my crap together in, you know, a crazy kind of world that we're living in right now.
You know, you and I have worked together a few times, and I'm learning more about you now. Maybe that just is a feedback to me that I need to ask more questions of people when I'm with them. But I'm learning more about you now, and I love, like I said from your introduction, I love the journey that got you here. But I also love, the embodiment that you have about doing your own work. That's a pretty right there on the surface theme for you in your work. So I really appreciate and respect that.
Thank you. Yeah, I see that, you know, in you and in the other staff as well, you know, at Evoke, that's not just something, that's not like an expectation. It's an invitation of, you know, to be able to do this work. We do our own work and we work with other people, and it's just sort of, you know, it's part of the culture, which I think I love, because so much of our culture today is not that way. It's not, you know, if you go to therapy, then you're somehow not okay. When, you know, I think my friends that are in therapy or my clients that are in therapy are some of the most emotionally healthy people, you know, that I know, rather than, you know, those that refuse to. So, yeah. So I appreciate, you know, your support with that for sure.
You are a mother.
I am.
Wife, you're pregnant.
Also, I am. When are you due? March 1st.
March 1st.
Yeah.
I'm always curious about this. Maybe it's not one or the other. Maybe it's both. But the question is, your work as a therapist, how does it impact or inform your parenting and your family life? And how does being a mother, relatively new mother, impact your work as a therapist? Can you speak to the kind of the back and forth in those two roles, and how each kind of inform or support the other, or maybe one has a much bigger impact on the other?
Yeah, I think, you know, I am a new mother. So luckily, I am hoping to, you know, learn as much as possible along the journey. But I think, you know, that's something that has been really valuable to me, is learning that, you know, even when I talked about like the idea of being a therapist, I, you know, had to have all the answers and I had to be the expert. And I, you know, kind of put these things up on this pedestal. And it's been so powerful to learn that I do not have to have all the answers, you know, and that is okay. And that is accepted and loved when I don't, when, you know, sometimes I have, she's 3 and a half. So, you know, sometimes having a toddler can be really difficult, and it is okay for me to have a day where I am just a really crappy mom. I just did not have, you know, a good mom day. Or, you know, there are times when I am not a very good wife. There's a lot of times that I am really good, and there are a lot of times that I am a really good mom. But there are also times when I am just a crappy human sometimes. And in the relationships that I have now in my life, that's okay. That's accepted. That's, man, I understand, you know, why that would be really hard for you. Or that's, you know, I have people in my life that are like, hey, I get it that you just are a really sucky person sometimes. And that's okay. And I love you. So that's, you know, for me, it's being okay with being imperfect is something that's just really, you know, kind of kind of stuck with me since, you know, really probably since like my work with New Haven, you know, is because that was a large part of their work was focusing on you can be really crappy sometimes. And that's okay. If you don't have, you know, the bandwidth to be able to do this today, that's okay. And I can be okay with that.
So you've been with our intensives program for a little while now. Maybe you could share with those that might be listening what you've seen, the impact of it, kind of how you see that program and explaining it to people. People ask me all the time, and I answer the question all the time, about intensives, about what it looks like, what it feels like, why do we do it? What would you say to a person considering an Evoke Therapy intensive, such an unknown idea, since something so outside of their knowledge base? What would you say to somebody based on your vantage point, your observations of the work that we're doing together?
I think I would say, you know, I understand the fear and the anxiety of what the heck is this thing that I'm signing up for, because it is a little bit daunting. And that's what I think is so beautiful and unique about, you know, the intensives, you know, that you and I have done together. None of them are the same. They're all very, very different because we are able to be with them wherever they need to be. We're able to go with them wherever they need to go. And so the impact is really going to be whatever the person, you know, wants it to be. And I love, love, love the idea of intensives. They are something that is fairly new to me in my work with, you know, Evoke. I think I've been there almost a year or something like that. And COVID has kind of, you know, put a damper on some of the intensives that we have wanted to do. But something that I have learned from, you know, being a part of these intensives is that you can accomplish and get through so much more than you can, you know, in the clients that I meet with an hour every week. It's, you know, we're getting into something and then, you know, your hour's up and you've got to, you know, go continue to live your life. And so I think the impact of the intensives is, and this is something that you say all the time, is we have time. There is time for whatever you need, whatever you're coming to this experience with, whether you know it or not, because sometimes, you know, we have had experiences of like, man, I didn't even think that I was going to talk about this when, you know, I got here. And now all of a sudden, this is kind of the focus. And I love that. I love that we are able to walk with our clients in wherever they want to go, whatever they need. And the beautiful thing about the intensive is you have time. We have, you know, 2.5 days or 4 days or however long the intensive is, we have time to be as patient as we need to be to do the work that you need to do.
Well, thank you, Emily. I really appreciate getting to know you a little bit better, and I'm sure so will all the listeners and the work we do together. I'm looking forward to the next time that we get to work in person, an intensive together. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure for sure.
Bye.
You'll be
better.